Hello and welcome to Two Girls Who Read. My name's Olivia.
And I'm Lily, and this is the podcast where we talk about anything and everything book related.
This week's topic is our top reads of 2022. Our top 10 reads
of 2022. Our top 10 reads of 2022.
We are back.
Yes. If you want to compare this episode after you're done listening it to last year's episode, I feel like it's changed. I don't remember what my top 10 reads were last year, but I feel like they're different than they were this year. So.
Well, they have to be, because the whole point of our top reads is we have to have read them this year. So.
Well, obviously, I mean, like, different vibes, Olivia.
different vibe. Oh, I get it. Yeah, yeah, different vibes.
Like, obviously, they're different books.
I did not get that, but like, yeah, I get it now.
Vibes, okay. Yes.
Yeah, I would agree with that, you know. What a good point to bring up. I would say, though, for me, I read so many less books this year than I did last year. Last year, I read over 40 or something.
Yeah.
This year, I read, I think, well, it's basically the end of this year. We're recording this on the 29th of December, so, like, I feel like we can, it's safe to say I'm not going to make my 60-book Goodreads challenge by the end of this year when I've only read, I think, 20 books this year.
Hey, come on, you can make it.
Well, if I was one of those girlies that read, like, 500 books every day, maybe. I wish.
Yeah.
I wish I had that speed. How many books have you read this year?
I read 50.
She read 50.
My goal was like 90, I think, originally, but then I changed the goal to be 50.
Aren't you a bit povo?
Yeah.
I read 21 books, actually, so boom.
Ooh. All right. So we had less to choose from this year. But nevertheless, my top 10 are quality, I feel like.
I feel like I read less books this year, but they were quality books.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, with some exceptions, which we will not talk about. This episode's not for that.
This is for the winners only.
Winners only. And yeah, I will say maybe slight spoilers ahead. We like to entice you.
But we won't spoil the book.
We don't want to ruin it for you.
Because also some of these books that, like, I know definitely some that are on my list. We haven't shared each other's list with each other or anything. So, like, I don't know what's her top 10. She doesn't know mine. But I know some of mine that are, like, on my, like, top 10 list. Like, she hasn't read and, like...
We don't know each other's list. We're reacting to it live. Also, before we get into it, quick update on if you've been keeping up with this podcast, which I understand has been hard because we have not been posting. But you know, is what it is. We'll update you guys maybe later. Maybe in next week's episode. But basically, if you've been keeping up, we challenged each other to read 3 books that the other person has not yet. And Lily challenged me to read If We're Villains by ML Rio. What other book? Oh, Carrie Soto's Back by Taylor Jenkins Reid, and what was the other one?
Queen of Air and Darkness.
Queen of Air and Darkness by Cassandra Clare. I would like to give an update to say I have started 2 out of 3 of those books. I'm almost finished Queen of Air and Darkness. It's only taken me 7 long years. Give it to Lily to be like, let's do a fun, quirky thing where we recommend each other like 3 quick reads. And she's like, read this 900-page book, bitch.
Well, to be fair, you'd already read the first 2.
It's still 900 pages. Yes. You don't even have to read 900 pages in total, I bet, if you put all 3 of mine together. Like, so I'm getting through it. I like it. I'm excited to do an episode on The Dark Artifices. And I did start If We Were Villains, but I have been distracted because a lot of other books have come out recently, which some of them you will hear me talk about. And yeah, what about you? How are you going with my 3?
She challenged me to read I'm Glad My Mom Died by Jeanette McCurdy, Bloodmarked, the second Legendborn book. And the 3rd one was like her, like, a childhood book. What was it again?
Oh, The Ultimate Sacrifice.
The Ultimate Sacrifice. That's right. Her favorite book when she was like 13. So
it's like an Apple book. It's one of those covers with people on it. It was like edited
on Pixar.
Yeah. Like. Sorry, but guys. Pixar wasn't even like a thing back then. So Pixar before Pixar.
Yeah.
How you going with them?
Well, I started and finished I'm Glad My Mom Died by Jeanette McCurdy. Mm-hmm. So that's good. And I haven't started the other ones yet. But Bloodmarked is on my neck. Bloodmarked is on my next, like, to read thing. So
see how I'm actually doing better.
Okay, reading. I've finished one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, let's get into it. Number 10. What's your number 10?
You want me to go first?
Well, we'll do Paper, Scissors, Rock to see who goes first. How about that?
Okay. Ready?
Yeah. Paper, scissors, rock. Okay, scissors, paper, rock. We both did scissors the first time, but she did scissors again and I did paper because I like to spruce it up. So you get to go first.
All right. So in the number 10 spot, I've talked about this one on the podcast before. But it was, I had a really hard time actually thinking about what to like put in like the 10 spot. Because I feel like the 10 spot, it's like still like a good book, but it's not like, oh, it's my favorite book or anything, you know what I mean? Yeah,
it's like, does it make it bad? But then you're like, but 10 out of every book I read this year is still good.
It's so good, you know what I mean? So I had a bit of a hard time. But at the end of the day, I ended up putting Perfect on Paper by Sophie Gonzalez. It's like a cute little romance contemporary book, but like, it was good because like it didn't have like all the annoying tropes that I don't like.
Give us examples.
Well, like, I feel like so many of like romance books like today, like I feel like they're kind of like all the same. Like, oh, there's like a grumpy man who like bullies the protagonist and then she's just like short and petite and he loves that.
Can I be honest?
What?
I cannot even focus on what you're saying because the amount of likes in that sentence.
I'm sorry.
Was more than usual.
I'm sorry.
It was like really like bad, like this, like.
I'm sorry.
I love anyway. It. I love you despite your likes.
Oh, wow. That is so kind.
Yeah, but yes.
That is like so kind.
Like, totally. Okay. It didn't have the tropes.
It didn't have the bad tropes that I feel have gotten old.
It didn't have the tropes that glamorized abuse, pretty much, is what you're saying.
Yeah. I just, and it addressed a lot of things. It was like a queer romance book, right? But it addressed some things that other queer romance books haven't addressed, you know what I mean? I felt like it brought something new to the table in that aspect. Like, a lot of internalized homophobia as well, and then even homophobia, like, from the community as well was, like, addressed.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I've never really seen that before.
Homophobia within the community is something that doesn't get talked about.
Yeah. So, I enjoyed it. It was a good read. It wasn't very long, and I don't know, I liked the characters, I liked the plot, I liked how they ended up getting together, like, I just liked a lot of stuff.
Can you read us the synopsis off of Goodreads, or either off the top of your head, just in case they want to read?
I'm just gonna do it off the top of my head, because I never enjoy Goodreads synopses, so mine is better. So, Perfect on Paper is about a girl who has basically a relationship advice business at her school, but no one knows who she is, like, who's giving the advice.
Mm-hmm.
And she just has this locker that she knows, her mom works at the school, so she knows, like, no one ever gets that locker. Like, I forget the story with the locker, but anyway, like, and so people can, like, drop like letters for like advice, like in the letter, and then with like cash in the envelope, and that's like her little side hustle. Is
it's sex education.
But then one guy finds out like who she is and is like, I don't want advice from a letter, I want you to help me get my girlfriend back. She dumped me, and she agrees to help him out because he's going to pay her a hefty sum to do this.
How much is a hefty sum? Because here's something about books set in high school. They're always like, that's so much money, $5. And I'm like, honey, when I was in high school, I was like, why am I not a millionaire? You have to give me like $1 million to wash those dishes or whatever.
I don't remember how much it was, but I remember it was a lot more than she was making, like, already just doing the letters. And Anyway, and so she agrees to help him, but she's a bit underqualified to be giving relationship advice because she's been in love with her best friend for like years. And the best friend, like, she can't tell her. She's like,
aren't we all?
Aren't we all? Sure. And so she has a bit of a journey there, and basically they get a lot closer when she's helping him get the girlfriend back, and I don't know, I found it a cute story. Mm-hmm. I listened to it on an audiobook, and I really like the narration on the audiobook, so.
Yeah, that does help.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of that movie that came out on Netflix, like the half of it, or the other half of it, had a similar plot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was like girl, except she wrote people's essays.
Yeah.
And then this guy was like, you're really good at writing. Can you write, like, text to the girl I like and, like, make her fall in love with me? But then she ended up falling in love with the girl who she was sending text to. And the guy ended up falling in love with her. And it was
a whole thing.
Whole shebang. Okay. Well, my number 10, thank you so much for asking, Lily, is I felt the same as you. It gave off the same energy when I got accepted. And some of you will find this hard to believe. I got accepted into the Excel math class at my high school. Okay, don't give me that look. I used to be good at math, okay? But anyway, how it worked is there were like hundreds of us in the year. And the top 27 or either 21 or 27... very different numbers, I know, but the 1 and 7 kind of give off the same vibe to me. So, because you just gotta add a little line on top of a 1 to make it a 7. So, okay, so it's either 21 or 27, and they pulled. It was so brutal how they did it. This is what happens when you're like prestigious, like private school, in high school or whatever. It's so competitive. They would pull the kids out of the class and like whisper to them and be like, do you want to be in extension math? Like whisper, whisper, whisper. And then make them go back in the class. And it was such a competitive environment. Like if you didn't get asked to be in the extension math class, you might as well go kill yourself. Like what good are you then? And so everyone would always be waiting. Like whenever a math teacher walked past like a classroom, because you only were able to be accepted to do math as an elective if you got accepted into the extension math. Which who wants to do math as an elective? It was ridiculous.
What does this have to do with your number 10 read?
Well, it gives the same vibe. One day I got pulled out of the class and I was like, oh my god. And they would tell you what number you were. So they'd be like, you came first in the year in math, second, whatever. And he pulls like a group of us out. And in front of us goes like, oh, Jessica, you were 5th in the year. Oh, Demi, you were like 16th. James, you were like 2nd. And Olivia, you were last. And Olivia, you were like 27 out of 27. And I was like,
you're still there.
I know. And I was like, okay. And I like laughed. I was like, that makes me feel good. And then he goes, well, like 27 out of the year though. And so that's what 10 gives the same vibe of.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so my 10 is The Heartstopper Yearbook by Alice Oseman. This was just a cute read. It was short, it was quick, it was efficient. I'm a fellow writer, but I'm a wannabe writer, let's be real. And so I love books that kind of give behind the scenes of what went into doing a successful series.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so cute because I also love these characters so much that Alice Oseman has created. So the way that there was like little arts of them in different universes, I thought was really wholesome and gave the same vibe as those art books that Disney release where you can buy like the art of Turning Red, the art of Tangled, and it gives behind the scenes like stages of creation of the film in a book form, and I really liked it. So that's mine.
Very good.
If you don't know what The Heartstopper Yearbook is, just go look it up because it's not really a plot thing.
Yeah, like it's part of the Heartstopper universe, I guess. So yeah, there's not a synopsis for it, I feel.
It's more like the author's scrapbook. Yeah.
All right, so my number 9 was a new release this year, and it was Carrie Soto is Back, Taylor Jenkins Reid. I really liked Carrie Soto is Back. I found it very entertaining. I'm not a tennis person. I've never played tennis.
Oh, you're not one of those people that, like, tennis. Cry when Serena, like, wins? You're not one of those people?
No, I don't follow tennis at all. But I learned a lot about tennis in this book. And I was very invested, like, in the tennis matches. Like, I feel like Taylor Jenkins Reid's books are always so character heavy. But this one, I was very just invested in the tennis tournaments, which was very weird for me considering I'm not into it. And so because of that, it's my number 9 because I really enjoyed reading it and I was like on the edge of my seat. I felt like I was watching. She described like all the tennis matches very well.
Oh, that's good.
So I felt like I was watching it on the edge of my seat. But
you're like those Miis in Wii Sport. Yeah, remember how they just follow back, it? Back, that's funny. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think I really enjoyed it because of that. So it was a very well-written book, I thought.
I'm sorry, but was Carrie Soto's main competitor, like, the orange me? Remember how that, when you played Wii Sport, there was always that orange, like, black guy with the mustache. And when he was on the court, you knew shit was going to get real because he just was a beast at, like, Wii Sports tennis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. I'm sick, so I've coughed, like, I think many times.
She's
so.
A bit sick, love. She's got the COVID. She doesn't actually have the COVID. The way we were so like, it's not funny.
I don't have COVID.
It's not funny. It's not.
It's not.
It's not the COVID, I promise.
And Carrie Soto is Back. It's about, well, obviously it's about Carrie Soto. She's a retired tennis champion.
And she's not back.
And
she's back from rehab.
No. You haven't read it.
Yeah, I know. I was just like,
let
guessing.
Me give the synopsis.
She's back from Ohio.
She had the award for the most Grand Slam wins in tennis. And one day, as a retired tennis player does, she's watching tennis with her dad, who used to be her coach back in the day. And someone beats her record. And so she decides to get back in the game to defend her championship if her
what
dad...
What a petty little bitch.
I know, I loved it. If her dad was willing to coach her, which he was. And it kind of takes you back then after that to when she started playing tennis and her original wins. And then it brings you back into... She plays one season of, like, the four biggest. So she plays, like, Wimbledon, the US Open, the Australian Open, and...
I don't know tennis, don't even try.
And France.
She went to France. Paris.
Yeah, anyway. And I learned, like, so much about all, like, these different, what's it called? Like, different countries'
tournament?
Events.
Yeah.
Like, they'd be like, no, like, Wimbledon is your best ground. Like, you can't play on grass. Like, you're bad at playing on grass, but Wimbledon, that's your best ground. Like, and I was like, it is her best. I'm like, oh, no. It's not her best ground, you guys. How's she gonna win?
Can I ask, you're saying you learned so much about tennis. I played tennis for a bit. Can you tell me the two different ways you hit a ball? Like, the two different names?
Oh, no. I just felt like, now that I learned, like, a lot about, like...
I just wanted to test the theory,
any of it. Yeah. I don't remember any of it. But, like, more when I was reading the book, like, I feel like she made it in a way where it's, like, you could still picture everything that was happening perfectly without knowing anything about tennis. Like, I was watching tennis.
Yeah, Taylor Jenkins Reid is good at that, for sure.
So, anyway, my number 9.
Number nine for me was Our Violin Ends by Chloe Gong.
Oh, I forgot you read that this year.
I did read that. I forgot it, too, but I saw it in my Goodreads. I was like, oh, I'll put that in. So, Our Violent Ends is a continuation in the number one New York Times bestselling duology, These Violent Delights by Chloe Gong. We did an episode about it, so, like, about the duology. So, if you've already read it and you want someone to talk about with it, just go watch that episode and you can hear us talk about it and we'll talk about it with you. I have to burp. Thank you. Anyway, so, since I don't want to spoil what the second book is about, because obviously it's a continuation of the first one, These Violent Delights is set in 1920s Shanghai, It's a retelling of Romeo and Juliet, and the Romeo and Juliet retelling characters, we have Roma and Juliet, who are both heirs to rival gangs in, like I said earlier, 1920 Shanghai. And when they kind of have a little bit of tension, they have a bit of a past, and they have, you know, a little bit of romance. And when a monster starts coming out of the water and infecting people with this deadly disease that makes them claw at their throats and kill themselves.
Lovely.
These rivals need to very quickly learn how to work together in order to save Shanghai. I wasn't as much of a fan as the first one as I wanted to be. I talked about that in the episode that we talk about this duology as well. However, I do admire Chloe Gong's writing style, and I do admire her politics writing. She has a degree in international relations, I learnt, and that is very evident in her writing. But, you know, I wanted romance, and I just wanted ooey-gooey enemies to lovers, like enemies to lovers, back to enemies, back to lovers, all the shebang. And I felt like she delivered more than that in Out by the End. So I'm going to... Definitely. Yeah, definitely. So while still doing a good job at writing the politics and... Yeah, so my number 9. Very good. And I'm excited to read her Foul Lady Fortune duology, which Lily has already read.
Yeah.
Okay. Your number 8.
My number 8. I actually just finished this one. This was my last book that I read in 2022. And it is the second book in the Renegades trilogy, Arch Enemies, by Marissa Meyer. Again, I will not give the synopsis of the second one, because obviously it'll spoil the first one. So I'll just give the synopsis of, like, the Renegade series, I guess. But the Renegade series is about our character Nova, who is a villain. Because she's got some beef with the society's heroes, the Renegades, they call them. And the Renegades saved them from the Age of Anarchy, which is when Ace Anarchy, a villain, basically tried to give... His whole cause was about giving prodigies, because a bunch of people in the society, some of them have power, some of them don't, but prodigies were really discriminated against. And so his whole goal was to make it so that prodigies weren't discriminated against, but his methods and actions were a bit violent. And so the Renegades took him down, except he was Nova's uncle. So she's got a bit of beef with the Renegades.
She's like, that was my uncle Anarchy.
Yeah, exactly. And so she joins forces with, like, Ace and, you know, all of the rest of the villains in the city, and she is one of the only villains that they don't know what her face looks like, because she's always in, like, full gear with a mask and everything. And so using that to her advantage, she decides to join the Renegades and infiltrate their society so she can learn more about them, and in the process actually starts to see that kind of both sides are a bit gray, and neither one of them are actually good while the other one is evil.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and also she kind of falls in love with some of the one Renegade in particular, has a bit of a rough time with that.
If I was a supervillain, like, I love the idea of being like an assassin who wears like a mask and nobody knows who you are. Like, are you a boy? Are you a girl? Are you a they, them? Like, a secret identity.
Nobody knows, yeah.
I'm really trying to build something here, and you're just giving me nothing. Like, wouldn't that be cool?
It would be cool.
I feel like conservatives felt like they were in the anarchy age when, like, Biden got voted in.
Oh, yeah.
They were like, it is the anarchy age!
That's why
we must fight back as the Renegades. Let's storm the capital.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Mine's on a very different boat. My number 8 book, thank you, is Love Your Body by Jessica Sanders and Carol Rossetti. This is a children's book, okay, guys? But let me tell you, if you are not a child, you should still take the time next time you're at a local library or even just like at a bookstore and just want something to read for 20 minutes and chill out, I highly recommend you take a minute and sit down, especially if you are a female or a female identifying. Take a minute and just sit down and read this book, because it is so good, and it's something if I had a daughter, I would want to read this book to them. And it's literally just a book about teaching kids about self-love. And I have some quotes in my review, and it's just, self-love can be a journey full of highs and lows. Self-love is the most important kind of love, because the relationship you have with yourself and with your body is the most important relationship you will ever have. And then another quote is, bodies are not just to be looked at and admired. Our bodies are so much more than that. So, like, those two quotes really stood out to me, but the whole book's really great. And also, Carol Rossetti, who is the illustrator, does a great job at showing all kinds of bodies in this book. And it's just such a good message, and I really loved it. I read it in, like, 20 minutes or whatever. It honestly should have taken me, like, 5 minutes to read, but I was just, like, admiring the art so much and, like, the words so much. I really loved it. And then at the back, there was even kind of self-help services. So I highly, highly recommend this book. Yeah.
It was very cute. Yeah.
Yeah. Lily was with me when I was reading it, and I kept showing her pages. I was like, guys, look. Yeah. Your number 7.
My number 7 was another new release this year. We got a bunch of them this year, really.
Mm-hmm.
And that was The Atlas Paradox by Olivier Blake, the sequel to the Atlas 6 trilogy.
Which we've done an episode on.
We did do an episode on the Atlas 6.
Both of them. Both of the Atlas 6s, the self-published one and then
the self-published one, and yeah, one. Both of the first book, though. I was like, we have not done one on the Atlas Paradox.
No, there's like, two first books, silly.
Yeah, it was a very good book. I felt like it was a good continuation. I think that we really delved more into the characters of the Atlas 6 world a lot better. And I found myself understanding what the hell was going on, like, a lot more. Mm-hmm. Which I appreciated, and there was just a lot of tropes in there that I really liked. And then there was also a couple things where I was just like, I was hoping that they would happen, but you know, when your hopes always get so high and you're like, I could write a better book than this author, you know, no big deal, because then they don't do with it the potential that they could have. But there was actually a couple things that I thought of while reading this book that I was like, oh, it'd be cool. She, like, went this direction with it. And then she did. And yeah. I was like, okay. So that made me really happy.
You're like, I'm not a better author than this
paid
author.
She's a better author than me, I will say. But yeah, very good book.
Yeah. I just realized, I was like, that was something that I said to you in our episode, because you read the self-published version, which was, like, not as edited as clearly, I felt. And the self-published version of the Atlas 6 was very, like, it was edited in a way that it expected you to be smarter than I feel like a lot of people are. Yeah. As the traditionally published version, it's so much easier to understand. Like, they explain everything from the bottom up. And so... yeah, it just hit me that you probably haven't read an Atlas 6 book yet with that sort of, like,
clearness. With that editing, yeah. Because I didn't read the traditionally published first one because I had already read.
It makes it a lot easier.
It was great. I loved it.
Yeah. Okay, number 6. My number 7. Oh, that's so funny. You said your number 7 is the Atlas Paradox. My number 7 is the Atlas 6.
Oh.
Because I started the self-published version last year. But then I just waited for the traditionally published version to come out, and I finished it this year. So it was really good. I liked it a lot. The twist was good. The vibe was good. The characters are so great and unique, and some of the
complex.
Some of the most complex I feel like you can read about, honestly.
Yeah.
And Olivier Blake does a lot of research as well. I've had a little bit of a look at her YouTube channel where Olivier Blake is not writing, like, her YouTube series. Because, like I said, I am a wannabe author and I love looking behind the scenes of how people write successful series. And Olivier Blake is a great author to get into if you're a fellow writer, because she just like puts it all out there. She has like a ton. Yeah, she has like all the social. She has a website, a blog, and she has her video blogs, and she tells you exactly like how she wrote her stuff, and you can really learn a lot of lessons from her mistakes as well. Like, she talks about it. It's really good. Yeah, even down to like what she gets paid and stuff like that. Like, she's very open about that. And so I was watching that, and just the amount of research she had to do for like the Isle of Six universe is so much. A lot of effort goes into it, and I really appreciate it. So and for those who don't know the premise of the Atlas Six, I'll just give it to you now. Basically, we in a world where a bunch of people have magical abilities, there's this society called the Alexandrian Society, and if you get initiated into it, you have access to pretty much all the knowledge in the world. That's literally what you get. And if you have all that knowledge, you can do a lot with it. It goes as far as to say, like, you're basically a god, like, if you know all this stuff, like, if you have access to unlimited knowledge of any question you can know the answer to, you're kind of like a god. So it's like a big deal to get accepted into society. And when six people with magical abilities find themselves getting hand chosen by Atlas Blakely, the Atlas Six, they find themselves in a very interesting position where they very quickly realize, in order to get initiated into the Alexandrian Society, they need to kill or get rid of one of their Atlas Six. And that's a bit hard because all of them have like such crazy sexual tension. So they're like,
that's the only thing that makes that difficult.
That's the only thing that makes that difficult. But it's just very well written and very good. So, and if you love Dark Academia, this one's for you. So, that's my number seven. Number six.
Number six. So, I read one Shadowhunters book this year. And you bet your ass it's on this list. I don't think it would have mattered what it was. But this was actually a really good book. I read Ghosts of the Shadow Market by Cassandra Clare, which is just one of the novellas. And it's about Jem. And Jem is my fave. We love Jem.
We love Jem. Heart Jem.
And it was so great having like a 600-page book just about Jem throughout time. Don't want to spoil it too much because it really connects to a lot of books in the Shadowhunter Chronicles. So I don't want to spoil it too much and say what it's about, but it's a really good book, and it left me with a lot of questions as well for the new Chain of Thorns book coming out. She did a very good job of writing this novella.
I don't know how she keeps up, man.
I don't know how she keeps up either. It's so impressive
how she keeps up with herself. imagine being like, I have such a wild imagination, I have trouble keeping up with it. Like, insane.
Yeah, I don't know. But it was an incredible book, incredibly well written. Every story was very strategically placed, you could tell. Yeah, incredible. Loved it. So, my number six.
Yeah, perfect. Okay. My number six is Heartstopper Volume 4. I read both Volume 3 and Volume 4 this year. I read 1 and 2 like 2 years ago or something. I just never got around. It was when Volume 4 just came out that I read the first two. And I bought the third, but I don't know why, I just didn't get around to reading 3 and 4. And then the show came out, and since the show was coming out, I was like, I'll finish the volumes or whatever, but I don't know. And I thought about putting Volume 3 on here, but in my head, they kind of go together, so.
Yeah.
And in my head, Volume 4 was the better one out of the two, just because it touched so much more. It was such a turn in the series of graphic novels where Heartstopper, it's basically about a boy and a boy falling in love in its simplest form. It's a graphic novel series. If you have not watched the show, you're either homophobic or, you know, been living under a rock, as favorite drag queens Trixie and Katia put it in their Netflix I Like to Watch series. And it was just like a very different volume because it touched on subjects that you don't really expect when you're watching or consuming a piece of media that has coined itself as LGBTQ plus content. You know, I feel like a lot of the time representation for LGBTQ plus series stops at the fact that they are a part of the community. It's like, let's just talk about how sucky it is to be gay and call it a day. Like, you know what I mean? And so to read a book where not only like the fact that them being like gay wasn't even really the plot, it was just like something that they happened to be, like, that's good representation. And there were other issues, and you got to see like gay characters get treated the same as straight characters in the sense of their issues. They were able to represent other things, and just the fact that they like the same sex
mm-hmm.
or they like multiple sexes or whatever, yada yada yada. And I'm saying gay when I know that, like, Nick is bi, and I'm not erasing the, like, his bi, but the issues in Volume 4 very much revolved around, like, Charlie, who is the gay character, so that's why I'm saying that. So, yeah. Not to be confused. Okay, your turn.
The top five.
Yeah, top five. What big moment. It's the final countdown.
My number five is Foul Lady Fortune by Chloe Gong.
Oh.
I liked Foul Lady Fortune a lot more than I liked These Violent Delights and Our Violent Ends. Not that I didn't like those, but I think that Foul Lady Fortune, you could tell her writing's gotten a lot better. You could tell, I feel like sometimes in These Violent Delights, the politics are a bit confusing. Politics were not confusing in this one. It was basically nationalists versus communists. Could follow that. And I'm sorry, do I need to say more? Oh, I just like to say this takes place after These Violent Delights and Our Violent Ends. Takes place a couple years later, and a lot of our old cast of characters is back with the addition of some new characters, and the new characters were so good. I was a bit hesitant because I was like, I love. And also some of the old characters, I was like, really? I don't like you. Do I need to read about you again? But she somehow made me like care about them like so much more.
Mm.
And so it was just great. And need I say more? We have our like immortal, closed off, like demisexual character. That has to be fake married to like the crazy bisexual party boy, like charismatic like guy. And what can I say?
Oh, I can't. What more?
What more could you ask for? And they have secret identities that the other one doesn't even know about. It's just too good to be true.
No, watching her read this book was so interesting. She, like, really loved this book.
It was very good. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. Okay, so on that note, my number five was Lord of Shadows by Cassandra Clare, because in the wise words of Lily, I have finished one Shadowhunters Chronicles book this year, and you bet your ass it's going to be on this list.
Yes, of course.
Lord of Shadows is a continuation of the Dark Artificers trilogy, which I am currently trying to finish. However, it's taking me like an entire lifetime because it's so goddamn long. And the first book in the trilogy is Lady Midnight, and it follows the story of Shadowhunters Julian and Emma, who are parabatai, which basically means you're bonded for life, you're bestie boos, certified. And when you're someone's parabatai, you're not allowed to fall in love with them. And that's a bit of an issue for Julie and Emma because they have a bit of a crush on each other, aka they are in love with each other. They are basically married, right, like teen parents. And yeah, we kind of follow the journey of how far one would go to save their friends and their family and loved ones. And the answer's pretty far if you're Julian Blackthorn. And then we also have a question that if you are a Shadowhunter Chronicles fan, when it came out, many people were questioning of what does happen. Like, why can't you parabatai fall in love? Or what happens?
Especially after everyone read about Will and Jem, and they were like, why can't they be together?
Yeah, come on. Just make them polyamorous at this point. Like, yeah. So
I think she wrote this series to answer that question.
Honestly, she probably just got sick of it. She's like, fine, here you go. 900 pages of like tying up every loose thread. Because you know her fans would be like, but what about this loophole? Like, Will and Jem could have been together, like, with the... And I would have been one of those fans. I would have been like, come on!
Yeah, it would. You would have been you,
And you!
And me.
Yeah. Okay, your turn, number four.
Number four. Okay, so here, like, I just put Heartstopper in general, because I read all four in one day. I don't remember what happens in each individual one. And so I can't really
You just went down the rabbit hole.
I can't really say which one is my favorite. I literally sat in my dorm room this, like, past April, I think, or something, and sat down and read them all in one sitting.
Well, they take, like, 1 hour to read each, so.
Yeah, I didn't get up. I just read each one of them. And then I read, like, the Nick and Charlie novella as well right after.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, I know I liked the later ones better, like, 3 and 4, but I can't tell you what happened in each one. And so I just put, like, Heartstopper on my thing. I would probably, just like you, say that 3 or 4 was my favorite, probably 4, because I remember really loving that one. But like I said, I can't say 100% because I don't remember. I read them all too quick.
Yes.
So, yeah. And I won't explain what Heartstopper is about because you already did that.
Cool. Okay, so my number four is Daisy Jones and the Six by Taylor Jenkins Reid. I will always associate this book with, like, Europe, aka, like, Venice, because that is where I pretty much read all this book. We were on our Europe trip this year. I was not expecting to read anything while on our Europe trip because I was like, I won't have the time. Look at our itinerary. But then Lily's like, no, Olivia, let me show you how to get this free download. This was before Z Library was, like, murdered by the Colleen Hoover fans. Rest in peace, our love. And she was like, here you go, like, here is the book. And it was on my iPad, and I couldn't put it down. And it was just, like, the coolest. I loved it. It was so good. I'm so excited for the show. So excited for the show. Like, Sam Claflin's gonna kill it. Yeah, what more do I say? And the music's gonna slap. They have, like, Phoebe Bridgers, I think, doing the soundtrack. Yeah, I can't wait. And yeah, for those who don't know, Daisy Jones and the Six, it's a book that follows 70s, a very popular band from the 70s called Daisy Jones and the Six, who mysteriously split up mid-tour, like, in the 70s, and nobody knows why. And it's written in oral history format, so it's, like, in script form pretty much. Which is just so interesting to read. And Taylor Jenkins Reid just does so much with that format as well. Like, as someone who's never read a book in that format, it was just so cool, because not only was I being introduced to that format and that structure, I was watching it be bent as well, which was, like, very entertaining. Mm-hmm. And the plot twist at the end, well, there's, like, a lot of twists. Like, she keeps you on your toes, but especially, like, the big one at the end, like, the author's note, big deal. So, just very, very good. Lots of questioning of, like, just the human spirit, I guess. Like, the human spirit, dear. Like, the mind, body, and soul. But, yeah. Very, very good. Very immersive world and book and characters. Love it. Top three. Yeah.
All right. My third favorite is A Conjuring of Light by V.E. Schwab. Third book in the Darker Shade of Magic trilogy.
Oh, I don't know why I didn't think about that.
Oh, such a good trilogy. One of my favorite series. Fantastic read this year. V.E. Schwab killed it again with that one. And yeah, it was just amazing. Like, everything really came together. The characters, I just love every single one of them. They're all such good characters, such well written. And then just the plot as well. Like, I just loved it. I love, like, the world traveling, which is why I just love this series so much. I had a hard time picking, like, which one from the series specifically I would put on the list, but I feel like the most happened in the third one.
And there's going to be more, isn't there?
Yes. The third one, actually, it wrapped up nicely to the point where if you didn't want to read more, you wouldn't have to. Like, it's not a cliffhanger. But I found out a couple weeks after finishing the third one that she is not done. She is writing more. So
she is not done with her anti-religion propaganda.
Oh, I loved the anti-religion propaganda in that book. It was just, it was so subtle, but, like,
she tasteful.
She put, like, so much to think about in one line in that, in those books. Like, she would put one line out there, and it would have you thinking. You're like, oh, my God.
Funny.
Incredible. And can I just say that, well, what are their names?
It's the way I know you're going to be like, they are just mean so much to me, and they're so amazing. What are their names?
Kel and I know Kel and what? I'm so mad right now. I'm too sick. Like, how can I not remember?
It's the way I know that, like, you know these people.
I know. I've talked about them. I know them. They have my heart.
I know this man. I love him.
I love this man. Hold on, you guys. I'm going to figure this one out.
And while we wait, time for today's sponsor. Just kidding. We don't have a sponsor. We wish we did. Because we love money. Money, 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 money. Come on, at this point, just make up a name. Cal and Steve. So Cal and Steve.
I don't know. I'm so upset. You know what?
She's going to come in. Guys, this is so mean of you to make us do this every year. Because now I'm going to have to deal with her like at 2 a.m. She's going to knock on my door and come in my room and be like, Olivia, I remember. It's Jeremiah.
Oh, Rye. Prince Rye.
Rye.
My heart. It's a stupid name. It's not my fault.
Oh, really? You're like, anyway, Rye means the world to me.
No, Rye's storyline in that book was really good. But I think this just says so much that in the Goodreads, like, synopsis for the book, it said, one of the first things it says, like, the balance of power has finally tipped. And I was like, oh, that is just such the vibe of the whole thing. And I loved it. I loved every second of it.
You know you have to give the synopsis to the series now.
Oh, that's right. I don't remember their names, apparently. No, I remember
what happened. So Steve. And Jeremiah, yes.
No, but essentially we have Kel, who is a world traveler, in a sense. But not in the way that those TikTok girlies are. He can travel between the three different...
The shifting girlies, yeah.
Like the shifting girlies.
They're like, I smelt Draco Malfoy's perfume.
No, not like that. Oh my God. Death. Anyway, so we have four Londons in this book. We have Red London, which is the one that our characters are, like, mainly live in. And Red London is, like, magic London. Like, magic flourishes there. Mm. And then we have White London, where magic is dead, pretty much. They basically are living under, like, a dictatorship regime. And, you know, they're a bit fucked. And then there's Grey London, which is essentially just, like, what our world would have been like in London in the 1800s. Because mm-hmm. the whole thing takes place in the 1800s. So just very, like, mundane. And then we have Black London. And no one knows what happened to Black London. No one can go there. It's a bit of a mystery.
Enter Steve.
Yeah, and Kel works for the royal family. They kind of, like, adopted him, took him in a bit. And so he's basically been a part of their family, and because he is, like, the royal family's messenger, so he communicates with, like, the other kings of the other Londons. Mm-hmm. And there's only two people who can do that, him and Holland, who is from White London. And so he is, like, pretty controlled. He doesn't really have free will or anything. He's very, like, trapped in this, like, world. And one day, Kel goes to Grey London to deliver a message. And he ends up trying to go drinking after, meets this girl named Delilah, or Lila, who is searching for a more interesting life. And he somehow accidentally brings her back with him to Red London. And there's one rule that the time travelers have to follow, and that is don't bring anything between the worlds, basically. And he brought a whole person.
Yeah.
And he also brought back a possession that was left on him. Someone gave to him. We don't know who it is. Mystery person. And it is an artifact from Black London. And no one knows how they got it or what he's supposed to do with it. So, That's a little synopsis.
Good synopsis.
See, I remember what happens.
just not the names.
Not my beloved characters' names.
Yes. Fake fan.
I know.
Okay, my number three is Legend Born by Tracy Dion. Now, I could try and give you the plot of Legend Born, but it's the way that I would just sit here for 4 hours and being like, and another thing while I'm at it. Another
thing.
Selwyn Supremacy. Like, so I'm just going to read it, the synopsis straight off like Goodreads. Okay. Oh, I just, I was about to start reading my review and it starts with like, this book was nothing short of spectacular. And I'm like, what a narcissistic thing to put in your own book synopsis. Okay. After her mother dies in an accident, 16-year-old Bree Matthews wants nothing to do with her family memories or childhood home. A residential program for bright high schoolers at UNC, Chapel Hill, seems like the perfect place. Oh, it seems like the perfect escape. Until Bree witnesses a magical attack her very first night on campus. A flying demon feeding on human energies. A secret society of so-called legend-born students that hunt the creatures down. And a mysterious teenage mage who calls himself a Merlin and who attempts and fails to wipe Bree's memory of everything she saw. The mage's failure unlocks Bree's own unique magic and a buried memory with a hidden connection. The night her mother died, another Merlin was at the hospital. Now that Bree knows there's more to her mother's death than what's on the police report, she'll do whatever it takes to find out the truth, even if that means infiltrating the Legendborn as one of their initiates. She recruits Nick, a self-exiled Legendborn with his own grudge against the group, and their reluctant partnership pulls them deeper into the society's secrets and closer to each other. But when the Legendborn reveal themselves as the descendants of King Arthur's knights and explain that a magical war is coming, Bree has to decide how far she'll go for the truth and whether she should use her magic to take the society down or join the fight. Dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun.
Yeah, so it's an amazing book. Like, I can't talk about it enough. I already love King Arthur. Like, I just want to sit down and read all those books one day, actually. But, like, I love the lore of King Arthur. I think it's so much of our best, like, modern media, like, is King Arthur retellings, just because the stories are so cool. And, yeah, I just, so when you put that with, like, a YA book with all the cliches but done right, like, cliche doesn't have to be a bad word, you know what I mean?
No, it's just if you do them right. Like,
yeah, like, enemies to lovers is a cliche, but we love that, you know what I mean? So you can say, like, oh, this is a cliche book, but this is a cliche book in the best sense of the word, where it's just like every cliche that you want to happen and it happens. Like, even the ones that you don't want to happen, they still happen, but then you're like, no, but I liked that, like, it did it well. For example, one cliche I never thought I would like is the classic love triangle with, like, puppy boy versus, like, bad boy, like, with a clear trauma or whatever. But it's the way I ate that shit up. Nom, 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 nom. Like, licking the plate. It was so good. No crumbs. No crumbs left. Ate no crumbs. And it was just so good. And then even Bree is just, like, such a good main protagonist. Her grief is explored in a way that isn't just, like, brushed under the rug, which is such a missed opportunity in so many YA books that always start with, like, one of their close ones dying. And the magic's cool. A little bit confusing at times, but cool. And, yeah, I just love it. It's easily my favorite book series right now. And I do think there is a third one coming out. They haven't announced it yet, but I do think a third one is coming out because I read the second one and I'm like, there's no way there's not going to be a third one. So, yeah. Your turn for number two.
Number two. My second favorite book was actually, I came to the conclusion that it was Daisy Jones and the Six.
Oh.
I really liked it. I won't talk about it too much because you already did. But I just loved every character. And what the book really came alive for me. It didn't feel like something I was reading. It felt like something I was watching play out. I felt like I was living in the 70s and was a fan of this band.
Yeah.
And I don't think that there's anything she could have done better.
No.
You know, she did it spectacularly. And so, it's definitely like one of my favorite Taylor Jenkins Reid's books. She did incredible with the concept and executed everything perfectly. I loved it.
Yeah, period. Okay. Book number two for me is I'm Glad My Mom Died by Jeanette McCurdy. This is an autobiography by ex-iCarly star Jeanette McCurdy, who played Sam Puckett. And she basically talks about her childhood growing up in stardom as an actor, and particularly focusing on her toxic and abusive relationship she had with her mother. So trigger warning, like, before you go into it, like, there is eating disorders, there is like just abuse, and, you know, look up all the trigger warnings, but those are like the main two I can think of. And it's just so raw, open and honest, and talked about so many things in, dare I say, a humorous and comedic tone. And I love that, because, you know, it might be a bit dark to say, I felt, even though Jeanette and I have very different lives, I related to like a lot of what she went through. And it was so nice to see that portrayed in a way where it was like, I can tell that this person's speaking from the heart, because only somebody who's really been through that would know what that feels like, you know what I mean? And I felt that just constantly in this book of, oh my God, she pinpointed feelings that I hadn't even pinpointed myself yet, which really just goes to show how much time she's taken to reflect on her past. And it really just felt like she was finally like letting this all out, which was really good. And I just loved it. And I think she's done a lot for the genre as well of autobiography, right? Because so many people have read that book and loved it. And she's probably gotten so many people into autobiographies now just because hers was so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I loved it. Yeah. Second favorite book of the year.
Okay. The number one.
Number one. I feel like we need to do like a number one.
Number one. No. I think that anyone who's listened to even one episode of me talk this year isn't going to be surprised to say my favorite book was If We Were Villains. That was just... it was just too
number
good.
Number one.
Number yeah. one. It really was. I don't know. It's something
it's
about
a lot
it
of
just,
people's number ones, I feel like.
It's just one of those books that I think really, like, sticks with you. Like, the characters, the dynamics. I think it's so much more, like, complex than what meets the eye.
Yeah.
There's so much foreshadowing. There's so much, like, it's very beautifully written. You could tell a lot of thought was put into the writing process. Mm-hmm. The relationships between the characters is very unique and very different. And I think I just haven't necessarily found anything else like it, which I think is why it puts it very up high. We'll be doing a reread to get some of those hints.
And you didn't even understand the Shakespeare.
I didn't even understand the Shakespeare. Guys, I skipped the Shakespeare. Imagine how much I'd like it if I, like, actually read it and could pick up the foreshadowing that was in the Shakespeare quotes, you know?
Yeah. What's it about?
So, what is it about?
you're like, the real question is, what's not it about, Olivia? Like, that's what
the
question
is, what doesn't it cover? No, but we have our main character, Oliver. And you know I like it. I remember their names. I never remember standalone characters' names.
That is so true.
Only series characters'
names. Well, you don't even do that, apparently.
Apparently not. According,
Jeremiah and Steve would disagree. Yeah.
Yeah. But Oliver has just been released from prison.
He was in his prison era.
Where he has served the last 10 years for the murder of one of his fellow classmates. And the detective that put him there, is basically, the case has haunted him since he put him in prison, because he's like, I arrested you, I put you behind bars, but I don't think you did it. And so finally, after all this time, he agrees to tell the story of what happened on the night of the murder. And so, very cool premise, loved. Cool.
And how Shakespeare involved? You have to explain that.
That's right. Shakespeare is involved because these kids are fucking nerds. They're
losers.
They go to some, like, weird prestigious arts college in the middle of nowhere. And they're in, like, their fourth year of their degree in, like, Shakespearean theater. and there's only six of them in their fourth year class, like, and so it's the six of them, and spoiler, one of them
gets, oh yeah, keep going, sorry,
one of them gets sliced and diced, if you
but say. It's in the name of art.
Well, that's for you to find out if it's in the name of art or not.
See, at that point, like, I'm like, come on, Shakespeare didn't put that much thought into it, guys.
No.
Like, I'm like, you guys don't need to make a whole school about it.
Well, it wasn't a whole school. It was like a fancy art school. It was just that, like, degree.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Time for my number one.
You're number one.
Number one.
Number
one. Number one. Okay. Again, I feel like if you know me at all, you won't be surprised when I say Blood Marsh by Tracy Dion, which is the second book in the Legendborn series, was my number one. This book, it makes it sound like a demon is being exercised from me. It's so good. I just love it so much. I eat it up. I eat it, and it doesn't give me IBS. And if you know me, that is very rare. I love it. I love it. I love it. Selwyn and Bree. Oh, I just want to pinch their little cheeks and go, goo-choo, goo-choo, goo-choo. They're just so good. I love it. I don't know what else to say. I can't keep talking about it because, like I said, I will be here for 4 hours. Like, if you unleash the floodgates, you will get an ocean, a never-ending ocean. It's just.
I did watch her read this book. Oh, she was on it,
and you didn't even see like half of it. I read so much of it like at night, like just staying up till God knows.
I know, it was a roller coaster. It was constant like screaming. Like.
Yeah, you just wake up hearing. And yeah, you're like, what happened? I'm like. Nothing, just a really cute Selwyn and Bree scene, and you're just like, what the heck? But yeah, so those are our top 10 reads of this year. Overall, I would say we had a good year. We had
good quality,
a lot of different types of books as well. We've got like oral history, like children's books. Next year, I do want to delve into like a personal reading goal of mine. I want more poetry books, like, because just like those If We're Villain kids or theater nerds, I'm a writer nerd because I go to school for writing, and I do probably need to work on my poetry theater, my poetry nerding. I need to get better at that. And yeah, overall, there are a few books off the top of my head that I do want to read for next year, but we will save that for next year and one of the first episodes of next year.
Our 2023 TBR.
Yeah. So until then, thank you all so much for listening. Please join in on the conversation and let us know. We always have like polls and Q&As. Let us know your thoughts on those. And this week's like question will probably be like, what was your top favorite read?
Book, yeah.
What was your top three reads, or what was your top 10 one? I don't care. I want to hear it all. So please let us know. And yeah, without further ado, we will talk to you next week, and happy new year, and happy, I hope you all had a merry Christmas. Bye
bye.
Or Hanukkah.
Bye, bye.